For Newsweek and Barry Diller, it's like a Hollywood marriage. Lots of fanfare, then over quickly.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Newsweek is up for sale again. Media mogul Barry Diller, who runs Newsweek's parent company, AIC Interactive, said that buying the venerable publication was a mistake. He says he's now exploring a sale. Marketplace's Queena Kim joins us. Hey, Queena.
Hey.
Newsweek put out its last print edition. I think it was December. So what exactly is for sale?
So in a way, it's got a lot of history for sale. There's its archive of news articles, its subscriber list, and of course, it's got its storied name. But that name's almost 100 years old now, and it's sort of growing irrelevant. Here's Barry Diller making a similar point on Bloomberg TV.
A single magazine is a fool's errand if that magazine is a news weekly, which is a bit of an odd phrase today. News weekly, we have news instantly.
Part of the reason it says it's selling Newsweek is so that the company can focus on that news instantly part.
The instant part. Now, Newsweek went all digital since the sale. How's that going?
Well, not too great. On the web, Newsweek's content is being hosted by The Daily Beast, which is a daily online news outlet that's also owned by Diller's IAC. And reports are that hits for Newsweek's content on that site have been dropping. Newsweek also has a tablet edition, which has about 500,000 subscribers. Andrew Bojan reports on the media for Poynter Institute, and he says that's not a bad subscriber base for a tablet magazine, but...
There was a time not very long ago that Newsweek had 3 million print subscribers. It had about 1.5 before it went digital only. Now it's got less than 500,000, and that number is supposed to keep dropping.
Magazines that are made for tablet computers in general is sort of an unproven business model. So Bojan says that what you're really left with is the name Newsweek. But as you know, a name only takes you so far on the web because of all the competition out there.
Marketplace's Queena Kim, thank you.
Thank you.
There's news this morning that economic growth in the U.S., as measured by gross domestic product, is being revised downward a tad. New stats show GDP growing at 2.4 instead of a 2.5% annual rate. Government spending dropped more than first calculated. It's important to note that GDP does not necessarily correlate to well-being, many economists argue. Perhaps tweets do. Seriously, according to National Geographic, researchers looked at millions of tweets for references to happy terms and then mapped the result. Louisiana, Arkansas, and Maryland aren't too happy, according to this analysis. But the good old state of Maine shows up on the map positively glowing with happiness. Nevada, too. Saddest city in America, judging from the tweets, Beaumont, Texas. There's a new report out today arguing that some of the biggest food and beverage companies are making strides in the fight against fat. They set a goal by 2015, reduce the number of calories sold by 1.5 trillion. Companies have exceeded that goal already, according to the report, and more companies are realizing it doesn't hurt the bottom line either, Gigi Duban reports.
Turns out there's a lot of money in those 100-calorie packs of cookies and tiny soda cans.
We know that lower calorie sales increased by about $25 billion compared to less than $300 million for higher calorie products.
That's Lisa Gable, president of the Healthy Weight Commitment Foundation. The group includes food and beverage companies that pledge to cut the number of calories sold over 5 years. Gable says it works because people are more health conscious.
The consumer is asking for these products and they are stepping up and meeting the consumer demand.
Companies are meeting that demand in lots of ways, like cereal with less sugar. And that new, smaller packaging gives companies a chance to toot their own horn about healthier ingredients. Michael Cohen teaches marketing at NYU and did a study on the topic.
There's also a boost that the brand might get from being socially responsible.
A word of caution, though? Fewer calories are good, Cohen says, but Cocoa Puffs are still Cocoa Puffs, and the quality of those calories counts for a lot, too. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Let's move to the art market now, specifically Latin American art, which has been selling quite briskly at some Sotheby's and Christie's auctions this month. For more, we turn to someone who's covered the Latin American art market extensively, Mariana Atencio, a reporter with Univision. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, David?
Very well. I gather the market for Latin American art has been, what, steadily growing?
It's just booming. The auctions didn't fare as well as experts hoped, but, you know, it's still pulling in millions of dollars. You know, we're talking about 20-something million dollars per night.
What was selling? I saw some impressionist pieces and some contemporary works earlier this month.
Earlier this month, Sotheby's and Christie's pulled in $1.5 billion in 2 weeks worth of contemporary art, for example. And then this week, it was the Latin Americans' turn. And this market is very unique because it basically covers 20-something countries from Latin America and around 500 years of art.
Remind me of some of the names that dominate this art scene. I mean, I'm thinking of, like, for instance, Fernando Botero from Colombia with his, what do we call it, Mariana, his full-figured representations of the human form?
Full-figured sculptures of birds, of people. And Botero is very, very international. You know, the Asian buyers, for example, kill for Boteros. But we're also talking about the kinetic artists. We're talking about Calder, Carlos Cruz Diez. We're talking about Jesus Rafael Soto.
So who's buying? You mentioned some Asian buyers are showing lots of interest.
Yes. More than 50% of the buyers of Latin American art are actually not from Latin America. But Americans have always been very attracted to Latin American art because of the nostalgia, the subject matter, also the fact that many Latin American artists had relationships with the American artists. So in that sense, you're getting the very same value as an American abstract expressionist that may cost you millions of dollars, but you're getting it much cheaper.
So, Marianne, if you win the Powerball next time around, who are you going to buy?
I would say a big, big Botero, like the pair of dancers that was exhibited in front of Christie's this week and, you know, fetched $1 million.
Mariana Atencio with Univision, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
And, do you see this? Denise Garrido was crowned Miss Universe Canada the other night. The excitement, the pride. But it turns out Garrido's apparent victory stemmed from some kind of typo that led to a mistake tabulating the result. Riza Santos should have won it instead. That's why the pageant employs a third-party auditor. Ms. Garrido is being wonderfully graceful about the whole thing. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.